the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. Our show is broadcast every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, our show will help you to question your career reality. This show is for you if you were, are, or might be considering a career in the entertainment industry. Our guests will provide you with tips, advice, and resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in show business. Our guests work in various professions of entertainment, so that means that we will definitely have someone on the show sooner or later from a career that you are interested. If you want to check out our past guests, read their bios, listen to their interview instantly, or download one of the shows, go to the LA Talk Radio website. That's latalkradio.com. If you're already there listening to me live, then just click that link at the top of the website that says Channel 1. Scroll down and look for the graphic of our show, Question Reality, and click the link. And this takes you directly to our archive page where you can view the list of all of our past guests. Our shows are also available for download on iTunes under the podcast section. Just type in Question Reality Radio in the search box. And if you want to find out about our future guests, and thank God, hallelujah, praise Allah or whoever you praise, we have become so popular. People love the show. Thank you so much. And because of this, we are booked 6 months to a year in advance usually. Right now, I'm booked till the end of February. So hold on, people. I know you've been sending in requests to be on the show. We are going to get to you, but it'll probably be about March. So hold your horses. We're going to get you on. Now, if you want to find out about the future guests that are going to be on the show, then you want to go to our official Question Reality website, and that is questionrealityshow.com, questionrealityshow.com. Now, as always, we have the best guests ever on this show, as I've been told, and I know, because I wouldn't even dare to book someone who wasn't freaking phenomenal, as my beloved Andrew Dice Clay used to say, and today is no exception. We have this hot, sizzling, sexy Fran Capo on the show today. She is the Guinness Book of World Records person, female, for fastest talking female. She's a talk show host. She's a motivational speaker. She's an author, a comedian, and the list goes on and on and on. And she is a keynote motivation speaker, again, a 15-time author, comedian, TV talk show spokesperson, and this woman is, like, so cute and adorable. The first time I saw her was on one of my favorite shows, The Glam Fairy, which is a spinoff of Jerseylicious. Everybody knows I love my reality television. So I saw her and I'm like, oh my God, this woman is so super cool. I love this woman. And my husband goes, you should have her on the show. And I thought, oh my God, trying to track her down. Oh, what? And it's almost like magic. Her PR person contacts me and asks if she wants to be on the show. So this is really special for me today to have her on the show. Again, she has appeared in over 350 television and 4,500 radio shows worldwide, including Entertainment Tonight, Fox and Friends, The Late Show, Martha Stewart, Larry King Live, The Talk, The Doctors, and The Discovery Channel. And her Cuppa Capos, which are these humorous motivational tips, are sent out weekly, and she has a monthly newsletter called Capo Update. She is, you think I'm high energy, people. I know I get emails from everyone telling me, oh my God, you talk so fast, you're so high energy. I just don't understand what you're saying half the time. Well, that's because I'm from the East Coast, and I believe Fran is as well. But I think she talks faster than me. As a matter of fact, I guarantee it and would bet on it. Fran Kappel also has been a speaker to Fortune 500 companies on every continent. So without further ado, let's see what we got here. Are you there, Miss Fran Kappel?
I am here, and I'm loving your energy. I'm like going, oh, this is going to be a show. It's going to be like an hour show in like 2 minutes.
Oh, you know, I said that actually to the producer of the show before we came. I said, you think I talk fast? When Fran comes on, the show will be over in 5 minutes. I don't know.
That's it. Exactly. We'll go over everything. That'll be fantastic. Anyway, I'm happy to be on this show, and I just think it's hysterical that you saw me on Glam Fairy.
Oh, my God. Well, that is one of my favorite shows, and as I told you, when I saw them touching the cut, was good, and we both agree on that. But when I saw them giving you that color, I said, she is going to flip out and smack some bitches real quick. Experience was like, because that show is hysterical. Tell me what your experience was like on the show.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I was contacted to do the show, and they were like, you want to come in and audition? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. And they were like, yeah, come in and audition. So I auditioned, and then afterwards I was like, you know, I'm not really sure I want to do the show. And they're like, no, you'd be perfect for it. You know, you're outgoing, you this, you that. I was like, all right, I'll do the show. And then they give you like this 50-page questionnaire, and in it, it says, what are the things you don't want to do? Like, of course, I'm thinking, well, the one thing I say I don't want to do, they're going to do, so I don't want to mention too many things that I don't want to do. So then I said, but you know what? Just don't touch there. You can cut it. You could, you know, trim it. You know, you could do a little something to it, but not much. Now, remember, on that show, I mentioned that if I even got a gray hair, I would color it in with a black magic marker, which I really just not the tradition. And people were like, do you really? I go, you know how quick it is? I see one gray hair, take a magic marker. I'm done. I don't have to work. Oh, I don't have to pay $200. I'm done. So anyway, I get to the show, and, you know, they never tell you, like, what's coming up. And then when they do this thing, like, oh, we're going to just do a little rinse on your hair. I'm like, a rinse. Now you face it away from the mirror, and I'm going, I've never done a rinse, but this is taking an awfully long time. And they're like, no, don't worry. This is the traditional way, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they turn me around. My hair looked like Bozo the Clown. I'm like, and I said, well, I'm ready for the circus. They go, you can't say that. I go, what do you mean I can't say that? I go, I feel like I'm ready for the circus. They're like, no, you'll get used to it. I say, I'm not going to get used to red hair. Do you like it? I hate it. No, you really like it. No, I don't really like it. No, you like it. No, I don't like it. And so this is going on, and I start crying. They're following me in the bathroom. I'm like, get out of the bathroom. You can't come in the bathroom. So anyway, so, you know, obviously I had an agreement that I would keep the hair for, for a while. So I did. And then I eventually, because I wasn't going to, you know, whatever, they had already stripped all the black out of it. I was like, all right, well, I'm not going to black magic marker my whole hair, you know? So I was like, all right. So now I still kept this style. So that was cool. Although the clothes they put me in, honestly, I'm Catholic, but I felt like I was going to shul. That's what my friend said. They said, you're dressed up for shul.
I know.
What's with the leopard skirt and the puffy black short thing? I'm like, oh my. And the one, I hate those shoes where you only one toe sticks out. I'm like, are you kidding me?
I hate that too. Those peep toe shoes. I hate them.
I hate them. They always remind me of a lady that would be, an old lady that would be sitting on a park bench with her legs open and the stockings curled up. That's what it reminds me of.
Oh my God. Me too. Me too. I know when I saw what they put you in, Fran, I'm like, oh hell no. They have jerseyfied her. And it is not working out in the best Jersey way. It's not like you had Olivia from Jerseylicious. Now, she would have hooked you up really nice, but I don't even know what those girls were talking about. They just – I'm surprised.
No, but it was funny, though. But I got to say, I mean, Shari was really nice, you know, the hairdresser, even though, you know, whatever. She was upset. She was like, no one ever cried before. I'm like, well, I don't know what to tell you. And then Glamo was hysterical, but – and that's all. I'll leave it at that. And I'll just leave it at that.
I would never stop watching the show because I love Alexa. I think that I'm high energy and I think you're high energy. I think she falls in our category. I think she's a beautiful woman. I think she's so stunningly beautiful. And she's very quite intelligent. I just love the show. So I was really glad to see you on there. And I really liked the part where they had the bug and the guy was screaming with the bug. And I'm like, oh, my God, do they have bugs in that salon? I don't know what in the hell they were introducing.
And actually, that was really funny because what happened was while we were shooting, they were doing my hair. And all of a sudden, he started screaming. Ah! I'm like, what's the matter? What's the matter? He goes, a bug. So I got up from the chair. And I went over, and I said, what are you worried about? He goes, that bug. I go, it's just a bug. Pick it up. Throw it out. He's like, no. And he's screaming. So I stepped on it, and all of a sudden they go, they stop shooting, and they go, did you kill the bug? I go, what do you mean? I said, he was screaming. I killed the bug. And I said, why? What was it, like a stunt bug? What are you talking about? And then they just said, never mind. And I'm thinking, oh, that poor little bug, he was an actor. It was his debut. I killed him. So I go, very short resume for that bug.
I tell you, I, out of all the shows that I ever watch, your episode was the funniest and the best one, hands down. I mean, you just really made that show. And I was thinking, God, I hope they bring her on for, okay, in 6 months, they bring her back in. So how did you like your hair? And they do, you know, bring you on at least once in a while, because I just thought you brought so much to the show. But who knows?
Oh, thank you. I think they wouldn't bring me back because they knew I changed everything.
I know. Well, let's get the show started. Now, this is a question that I start out with every guest, because so many people, I know I'm fascinated by this, and other people have thought this is a very good opening question. When you were a child, what did you want to do or be when you grew up as a profession? And the reason I ask that question is because I like to see how people thought one thing, they were going to do or be one thing, and then all of a sudden they've grown up. Did you follow the path, or did you completely end up in a different career?
Okay, now here's the funny thing. If you would have asked me that question, maybe like 6 months ago, I would have had a different answer, and here's the reason. Because I remember in sixth grade telling my sixth grade teacher, I used to always, there was this bubble gum, like Bazooka Joe bubble gum, and it always had these little comics in it, and I would take them and make them into my own story. And I remember telling my sixth grade teacher that I wanted to write a book, and I started writing all these like little books, Joopy from Jupiter, and all these like crazy stories. And so when now I'm a, you know, well, actually now I'm an 18-time author, and so obviously that I remember. But what I didn't remember, I was just recently moved, and I was looking through one of those things like Who Am I books by Dr. Seuss, where you write all these things in there. And apparently back then I wrote that I want to be famous and on TV. And I totally don't remember that. When I did that book, I must have been like 7 years old. So if I hadn't discovered that book, I would have only remembered the part about wanting to be an author. Never would have remembered the part about me saying that other stuff. So because the thing that happened with me, the way that I kind of got into it was luckily, my mother, first of all, taught me that nothing is impossible. And my dad taught me to always find the humor in life. So for me, it's worked out, because as a stand-up and as a motivational speaker, if I do something and it works out, it becomes part of the motivational speaking. And if it doesn't, it becomes part of the stand-up. So either way, I could use it. But what happened was when I was in college, I was studying to be an accounting and philosophy major. And, you know, kind of the thing of like 1 + 1 = 2. Why? And so I, you know, and so I was studying that, and in my junior year, I was at Queens College, in my junior year, I remember thinking, wow, there's not a lot of female comics, but I was never, like, thinking about it, like, as a career or anything. And then I started saying to myself, wow, I wonder if I should do this as a career. So I asked God for a sign. God, instead of being an accounting philosopher and then I was going to go on to law school, that was my idea, that I wanted to go to law school, I was like, let me know if you think that I should be, you know, I need a sign if I should be a stand-up comic, you know. And this wasn't like a profession that a lot of people, like a lot of women were choosing or whatever. And even today, there's still a whole bunch more men than there are women, you know. So I was like, okay. So anyway, so I'd say this prayer, and then all of a sudden, at this car auction, and they had this thing where you can get your handwriting analyzed, and it said, you have a good sense of humor. Use it to make money. And I was like, oh, that's just some stupid handwriting analysis. Then I'm online at Great Adventures, and I'm joking with my friend, and the guy in front of me turns around and goes, I'm sorry, I've been overhearing your conversation, and I just have to say, I think that you're funnier than a lot of stand-up comics, and I think you should do it. And I'm like, that's just some guy online at Great Adventure. And you know, at this point, God's going, all right, how many bricks do we need to throw at you? And so then the third thing that happened was I took this like one-time acting class, you know, because you take minors for school.
Right.
And I was in the class and, you know, never had an acting lesson, just figured, oh, you know, that'll be a cool thing to fill it up with, whatever. And I take this class and I'm reading Edward Albee's The Zoo Story. No clue that it's about some guy trying to kill himself or whatever. I read it. I think it's a hysterical monologue. So I read it out loud and the teacher goes, well, I've never heard that interpretation before. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, Fran, this is about a person wanting to kill themselves. I go, oh, I had no clue.
So, oh, my God. Well, let me ask you, have you always been a fast talker, or did you have to train yourself to talk fast?
I mean, as a kid, I did always talk fast, but the way that I got to the point of breaking a record, because whenever I get excited about something, you know, I was always like, Mommy, I got to tell you this. I want to do this. You know, my mom's like, oh, yeah, slow down. But I mean, never thinking, oh, one day, yeah, I want to break a world record. I mean, this never occurred to me. And I was working at a radio station, WBLS-FM in New York City, and I was writing stand-up comedy for them. And kidding around, I said I could do a really cool Mae West impression, but I called the character Junice, Mae West's long-lost sister. So all of a sudden, the DJ turns, you know, throws the weather and traffic copy at me, and I start like, ooh, today the weather and traffic is. And in the 30 seconds I happened to do it, a lady from the Daily News was listening. She said, listen, I'm doing a story on weather and traffic, people. How long have you been doing it? So I'm not going to tell her 30 seconds. So I said, I've been doing it a while. She said, oh, well, yeah. What are you planning? I'm writing. I want to write. Include you in my story. What are you planning on doing next? I didn't have a next, but I had a lady from the Daily News. So kidding around, I said, oh, I'm thinking of breaking a world record. She's like, for what? But I didn't have a for what. So I said, I can't tell you because it'll jinx it. She says, listen, the article has to go in by 6 o'clock today. You decide that you want to let me know, give me a call. So I run out. I buy Guinness book. I start looking through it. I'm like, what record could I possibly break? I knew that people always told me that I talked fast. I called the lady up at 5 to 6. I said, listen, you said, you know, you want to know? All right, I'll tell you. I'm thinking of breaking the record for fast talking. She said, what's the record at? I'm looking in the book. I have no clue how fast any of this is. I said, 5:52. She goes, what are you at? I went, 5:50. I said, those last two words are a killer. She prints it in the paper, and the very next day, the Larry King Live people call me up and ask me to go on the show and break the record. And honestly, I didn't know who Larry King was. All I heard was cable. I'm like, hey, is this some kind of porn thing? They're like, oh, honey, no, it's a national show. So I said, what if I don't break the record? They said, Larry doesn't care whether you break it or not. He just cares that you attempted on a show first. So I called up Guinness and said, what do you have to do? They said something from Shakespeare in the Bible. Me and Shakespeare never got along. I had a prayer from the Bible that my mother taught me. I had 5 hours before the limo came to my house. I practiced it. And then I went on the show that night, broke the record doing 552 words a minute. And then I rebroke it at the Guinness Museum in Vegas doing 585 words a minute. And then I rebroke it at the Guinness Museum in Vegas doing the 603 words a minute.
It's like you created, you reinvented yourself right there on the spot. You created your own destiny right there. Like in a split second, you didn't have to ponder it for hours and take hallucinogens and LSD. You just like did it in a cab, right?
That is, you know what? That is exactly what it was. It was, and I think it's because my mother gave me always that thing like nothing's impossible. So
right.
Whenever anything happens, I always just go, my philosophy, anything, even when I ran the marathon, I never ran a marathon. I never ran like 2 miles before. And I was like, well, if they can run a marathon, I can write a marathon. Go to the library. If they can write a book, I can write a book. My philosophy is if they could do it, I could do it. And I'm never in competition with other people. I don't like competing with others. I only like competing with myself. because I feel like I should be my own best cheerleader. Obviously, I have a bunch of great fans, and unfortunately, my mom and dad have passed, but my mother and dad were, like, super supporters, and my son is now, and my boyfriend. But, you know, the point being, you have to be your own best cheerleader. And so I'm like, what do I care what other people are doing? I just need to care what I do to get myself further ahead. This way, it eliminates me being jealous of anybody else. It eliminates me worrying about anybody else. I'm not saying I keep my head in the sand and I don't know what's going on around me. All I'm saying is this is my life. I need to lead my life based on my principles, what I need to do, and so therefore I only need to compete against myself.
Absolutely. Now, you have so many different careers. Tell this audience, how do you get yourself motivated and stay focused on pursuing so many careers? How does one do it?
Okay, well, I think this is the bottom line of everything that I do, is that I have to, first of all, have a passion for it. Because if I don't, I know, you know, somebody will ask me something, and I know how I am. The second I say, all right, let me think about that, I know right away. If I even have to say, let me think about that, then I'm never doing it. Because that's just how I am. I know that in my gut, I feel like I want to do that. And the second I feel I want to do that, I want to know, now how do I get to do it? How do I accomplish it? And so what happens is I'm pretty good at compartmentalizing things. So, you know, when I wrote my first book, you know, when I approached the editor, you know, the publisher, were looking for somebody to write a book. It happened in Utah. And I was like, Utah? I go, it's going to be a brochure. Can we do like New York? And so they're like, we don't do East Coast books. I'm like, come on, I'm a stand-up comic, blah, blah. So I had no clue how long it takes to write a book, what a proposal was, nothing. And then the lady said, well, write a proposal. And you know, I didn't want to tell her, I don't know what a proposal is. So I was like, well, do me a favor. Can you send me a sample of your proposal so that I do it in your outline? You know, so she does. And I'm like, ooh, I got to write 3 sample chapters. Okay, fine. So I did this whole thing and I said I would do it. It happened in New York. And anyway, she asked me how I got the contract and she said, how long would it take you to write? Again, I had no idea how long it takes people to write a book. So I said 4 months and she went, 4 months? And I went, 3? She goes, no, 4 is fine. People usually say a year. And I was like, ooh, I could have done it the other way. So, but you know, the thing is you live and learn, but the bottom line is I feel is if you want something, go after it. You know, if it works, that's great. If it doesn't, if you really want it, you try again. If you don't, then you say, you know what, I tried that and I didn't like it, and that's not my thing, and you move on. But you don't want to be at the end of your life going, oh, man, what if I would have tried that? Because that's the worst feeling to have when you regret not having tried something you wanted to do.
Yes, I remember. Do you know, I don't have many regrets in my life because I don't focus on negative things.
But that's awesome.
I still remember the 2 or 3 that I didn't jump on an opportunity to do something, not necessarily business. I mean, there was the British guy in England. But
There's always one of those.
Because, you know, I think that when you're young and in this particular situation, I mean, the most beautiful man in the world, or at least I thought it was, he asked me a question, just a simple question, would I take a walk with him down the harbor? And I was so scared and I let myself get so overwhelmed because of his beauty that I said, oh, no, thank you. And I just stayed there. And do you know, I have never, ever I've never forgotten that, and that is a regret, and those things you remember. So I don't care if I make a fool out of myself or not. If I want something or I want to ask something or do something, I just do it. What the hell? I don't care. If you want to judge me, fine, but at least I'm going to get what I want. You know, ask.
Well, you know, there's a great line that of all people to quote, it's Dr. Seuss. He says, do what you want. Those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind.
Oh, I love that. I've never heard that.
And I love that saying because I'm like, that is so true. Your true friends will go, I'll love you either way. I mean, I'll love you either way. And they don't, you know, that you just do it. And the ones who are like, oh, you shouldn't do this. Who the hell are they?
Exactly. I'm like, I do not care what you think. You can kiss my big fat ass and let me eat a cinnamon roll as I'm walking past your skinny ass. So that's the way I'm thinking. Now, what are the determining factors in how you, because I know with you having so many careers, you've got to have a great team. So a lot of people go, oh, my God, you know, I don't know how to choose. What do you think are the determining factors in how you choose a great team to promote all of your professional endeavors?
You know, I wish I could say I have a team. I actually don't have a team. I do it mostly myself.
Wow.
But in the projects themselves, like, for example, obviously if I'm writing for a publisher, my team becomes the editor that they assign me, and then me and her become the team. And so with my books that have been published with Globe Pequot, I've actually had two different, you know, they've had two different editors that have worked with me because one left or whatever. And so they became my team. So I've worked with them through six books. So in that instance, the team person is assigned to me. But, for example, I have a new TV show that it's going to be an interactive live chat show that is starting up tomorrow, as a matter of fact, Monday, July 16th, on Kondoot, KONDOOT.com/Frank Capo. And it's from 5:30 to 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Now, my friend, fitness celebrity John Baisdell, he was doing the show, and then his friend, Michael Warbuck, started doing the show, and they said, Fran, why don't you also do a show? So in this instance, we all cross-promote each other because we all want each other's shows to be a success.
Right.
So that became our team of helping each other cross-promote. The thing with me, for anybody that I'm working with, I have one rule, and this is the thing, is you always have to communicate with me and keep me in the loop. And whether that means, hey, Fran, I can't make it today, whether it means whatever it happens to be, I will never get mad as long as you're communicating with me and telling me. But if you're trying to call somebody and they don't get back to you, and meanwhile you've scheduled something, I can't take professionalism is really, really important to me. Because you know what? You affect other people's schedules when you're involved. I mean, I book comedy clubs also, and not now, but because everybody has a JPEG now. But years ago, people would have to send in headshots. And I, you know, I would put, you know, whatever, the club would put the people's pictures in the paper, and I would go, okay, guys, send me your headshot or whatever. And a lot of times the comics wouldn't do it. And I was like, listen, there's two parts to show business. The business side you still have to do.
I'm sorry, Fran, we keep cutting. That I am so glad you said that, because a lot of people get caught up in the la-la land perspective of, I'm an artist, I create, I don't need to worry about the business. Well, it's business first, and then you get to show your shit. But you got to take care of your business.
You can have the greatest product, and if it sits on a shelf because you haven't marketed correctly, no one's going to know about it.
There you go.
So, and you do, in a way, have to get, although obviously, because especially with stand-up, you're bare self up there. It's the jokes you wrote and all that stuff. But the bottom line is you still have to consider yourself a product. And any product has to be promoted. So, I mean, when I say I don't have a team, I do have, like, a friend of mine who is my assistant, in the sense, like, when I'm working on certain projects, and if I can't, I'll be like, all right, do me a favor. I need you to come out and, you know, shoot some photos with me for this book, or I need you to call this person and set that up, you know, type of thing. But my requirement for him, he was a friend first. I had to have trusted the person to be able to, that they're not going to do something that's A, and going to embarrass me on a professional level. And I had to know that he knew how to conduct himself when he called people back. Now, obviously, you had mentioned my PR person. I do have B, who works wonderfully with her. She is right on top
love
of stuff,
her.
You know, as
oh,
soon
yes.
as she gets up, you know, she is fantastic.
I love her. She returns emails immediately. She
yes,
is
her
on
and Sue.
It.
Her and Sue, or Sue is, the two of them work together, but B kind of works with me more directly. The second you tell them, they get right back to you.
Oh,
it's no,
God.
Like, 3-4 days later. And I like that. Now, I'm obviously, I'm not the only client, you know, that, you know, I'm working with them on that. But most of my press in the past, I've gotten most of my press by myself. You know, it's a combination of me doing things that sometimes people are like, wow, you answer your own phone. A lot of times I do, because I have to really trust the person that they're going to come across the way that I want my brand to, you know, to come across.
Exactly. Now, when you have a career that entails extreme multitasking like you do, what are some tips you can give the audience on how and what to do to prioritize themselves in business in general? How do you prioritize when you have so many things?
Okay, what I do is I literally have a list by my desk, and it says things I need to do so I don't get antsy. Okay? and that's what it lists. It has 1 to 25 things, and like, for example, I can read the things that are on there right now. Like, it'll say, 1, put out Capo Update. 2, do the radio show. 3, promote Condu. You know what I mean? Like, I have my list of things.
And don't you write it down on a piece of paper like me? Do you do that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. This is the list.
I do it. Yes.
And every day, I don't go to bed until unless something happens.
No, I check everyone out. You check it off.
Exactly. Until it's crossed off. And then what I do is I also have this book, and I've been actually they've quoted me on the back, because I buy this journal every year because I love it. It's called the Winner's Journal, and I every year it has the goals of the week, and at the beginning of the week I put all my goals, and then each day I do it until I get done through all those goals, and every day I write down the things I did, 500 jumping jacks, you know, who I called, you know, all the different, you know, things that I have to do. And because even with what people say, how did you write 18 books? What I'll do is, like, I'll know, like, you know, the publisher will tell me, you know, this is going to be 15 chapters or whatever, because, you know, it happened in New York, happened in Jersey, happened in Pennsylvania, a lot of research, but obviously putting my comedic and my own, you know, author voice on it. But I'll say, okay, I have 4 months and 15 chapters. 15 chapters divided by 4 months. How much is that? When's the, you know, halfway point where I have to hand in half the manuscript? Where do I have to? And then what I do is I divide it down. Okay, that gives me 2 days to research, 1 day to write it, second day to go in and do my first draft edit. And so I know I'll have 4 days, or what I allow myself, because, you know, I can allow myself more time, but I'll allow myself 4 days per chapter.
Wow, you break it down into the minutiae of things, don't you?
You know why? Because I read this thing a long time ago, and I thought it was the greatest philosophy. I don't remember what church it is, but it was this guy who wanted to build the glass cathedral. It's somewhere in the United States. It's a huge cathedral, whatever. I don't remember how much.
Here, California. It's the Crystal Cathedral.
The Crystal Cathedral. And I think, I remember reading how that guy came up with the money. And I remember one of his logical line of thinking was, whatever the cathedral costs, let's say it was $1 million. I could get one person to give me $1 million, or two people to give me $500,000, or three people to give me this, and he broke it down. And I remember thinking, wow, $1 million sounds like, oh my gosh, I got to get $1 million for that. But if I go, well, two at 500,000, all of a sudden that doesn't sound so bad. Oh, or I could get 1 million people to give me $1. So
I said
to myself, if I break things down where they're manageable chunks, you don't get overwhelmed.
I agree.
It's only when you start thinking, like, I got to do this today and tomorrow, and the books have got to be finished by this day. No, wait a minute, I got to book the comics for those comedy shows I'm doing. And wait, I got to do the live conduit show. And, oh, wait, I got to do, you know, I'm doing the world record. I'm doing the TV show and the commercial. Then all of a sudden, you're exhausted just thinking of your list.
Yeah, it definitely can be overwhelming, for sure. And I really like the way you handle that, because I do the same thing. Now, what do you think is the best way to motivate the mind and the body and the soul to reach the peak, to reach our peak performance as individuals? What do you think?
There's a couple of different things that I do, and obviously these are the things I talk about when I get hired by different companies for the motivational speaking. One, people sometimes are not motivated because they're discouraged, because they've tried at something so long and it doesn't seem like it's moving ahead. A key point of any motivation is where you keep your focus. You know, you could go into a party, and if you look in one corner of the room and people are arguing, you know, you go, oh, man, that was a crap party. But if you look to the other side and people are making out, you go, man, everybody was, like, you know, hooked up, kissing, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So it depends on where you keep your focus. So the very first thing I do every morning is I do gratitude, besides saying my prayers, I do gratitude. And the gratitude is I do a list of all the things I have to be grateful for. You know, I'm grateful that I have, you know, but I don't allow myself to repeat the same things in the same way. Because otherwise then it just becomes rote. You know, like you if you say something like, I love you too, you know, you just have a habit of saying it instead of it heartfelt.
Yeah.
And then you hear people all the time go, bye, sweetheart, love you. And then you're like, how does that person love me? They just met me, you know? So I say that when you do the gratitude in the morning, it can't be the gratitude that you just can rattle off. It has to be that you have to think of something different every morning that you're grateful for. And when you start the morning with that, you know, they call it the attitude of gratitude. But if you start that morning that way, the other thing is to stay motivated. If I see myself getting discouraged, I try to find the humor in it. Okay, so what about this situation is funny? And a lot of times the first time you go, absolutely nothing. And then you're like, okay. But I found humor in literally in places where even when my dad had cancer, okay, I'm saying that we found humor in every situation. And people say to me, oh, you can't find humor in every situation. And I'm going to say this one story here is like my dad, as I just mentioned, had cancer. So, he, you know, my dad was the one who always told me to find the humor and everything. And so he was, you know, like he would make me go out and buy a chia pet when he had the chemo to see his hair would grow back faster. And he would cut the chia pet's hair so he could win, you know, things like that. And so there was a situation. And let me just ask you, is this show, I have to, oh, okay, I did use, I don't
say,
know.
You can say anything you want on this show. It's
okay, fine. Okay, so anyway, so what happened was, when they have cancer, a lot of times they lose bodily functions, okay? So there was one point where it was 4 o'clock in the morning, my son was young, and I had to drive my son to school that day, and I would drive my mother to work, and I was taking care of my dad on hospice. My mom and dad were divorced. We all lived in the same house. My dad was in my apartment with me. My mom was downstairs. And so I hear my dad crying in the bathroom, 4 o'clock in the morning. So I knock on the door, and I'm like, Dad. And I go, let me in. He goes, no, I don't want you to see me like this. But I could tell by his voice that he was on the floor. So I was like, Dad, you got to let me in. He's like, no. So I got one of those little pin things, you know, how you could open Jimmy the lock, you know. So right. I opened them from Queens, New York, you know how to Jimmy a lock. Anyway, so you Jimmy the lock. And so I open the door, and he's laying on the floor, and there is shit everywhere, okay? Now, I'm looking at him, and his pants are down, and I'm like, all right, Daddy, we got to clean you up. And he starts crying. Now, this is a big truck driver type guy who, you know, always was, you know, almost the wise guy's name of one of my books because he had one brother, a highly decorated police officer, the other one that was in the mob. You know what I mean? Real tough guy. There he is lying on the floor. His pants are down. He's in crap all over his body. I'm like, Dad, get in the shower. And he's like, I never wanted you to see me like this. I go, Dad, not for nothing. I never wanted to see you like this. And so, you know, we're just, you know, doing this thing.
Humor.
And we just use humor. I put him in the chair, and I'm looking, and I don't know how this is possible, but literally, there was shit on the ceiling. They were everywhere. And I'm like, I don't even know how it got up there. So I'm sitting there cleaning it up, and it was disgusting, and I start, like, feeling really bad for myself. I'm like, oh, this is horrible. I feel bad for my dad. I'm like, oh, my God, I got to clean this up. And I'm like, all right, Capo, you tell people to find humor in everything. What is funny about this? And I'm going, absolutely nothing. There is nothing funny about this. I'm like, shut up and find something funny. This is how I'm talking to myself in the bathroom, cleaning up the crap. And then all of a sudden, I keep asking myself, because the crazy thing is when you keep asking yourself a question, if you ask the right question, you will get an answer.
Right.
So I said, what is funny about this? And all of a sudden, I thought, this is what it looks like when the shit hits the fan.
That is a great perspective. I love that. What do you think that, I mean, obviously, personally, I always use the humor approach in just about every situation if possible as well. And I just think that humor is a powerful tool in general, not only in my personal life, but in business as well. And I understand now that you feel the same way too. Can you tell the audience your personal perspective on how they can use humor in the workplace and in everyday life to relieve stress and enhance the productivity and increase effectiveness and communication? Because people out here are so stressed out being in entertainment. There's all kinds of emotions. And it's really hard when you have to work with a team. You know, how do you keep light and positive and upbeat about it?
Well, absolutely. First of all, it's funny because I have a book which is called Humor and Business Speaking in Everyday Life. It's on my website, francapo.com. That's one of the books that I wrote because people were asking that question. And the thing is, you know, a lot of the major companies, people don't realize it, but a lot of the major companies, like if you go to Google in Manhattan, I mean, that place looks like a big toy store with, you know, because they have the YouTubers that come up there and do their stuff. So there's props up there and things, and it's a fun atmosphere. So first of all, you know, before you can incorporate anything into your core being, put it on the outside so you can help yourself internalize it. So put some funny things. Have a funny calendar on your wall. Have a picture of you with someone you love, something that makes you smile on a daily basis. Read a joke in the morning. Get yourself into that humor frame of mind. And the thing is, once you start conditioning your mind to find out, like, what is funny in the situation, in the beginning it might be hard, but then afterwards you start to say, you start to realize what is funny. I mean, and the thing is too, like my son and I, you know, he still lives at home only because I'm Italian and I'm making him. And actually we're really close. We're really close.
You do his laundry.
I'm like, what do you want him about for? I know, but I mean, no, but the thing is, he's a great kid, but I mean, he's older, but you know, but anyway, the point being is he and I once a week will always pick one comedy to watch together. I mean, we both have a crazy schedule, but once a week we say, what are we going to watch? The Big Bang Theory? We're going to watch an episode of All in the Family. What are we going to watch? And we'll sit down and we'll pick a movie that we love that's funny, and we just do that to get yourself in the humor state of mind. And actually, that's one of the talks that I do, Humor and Business Speaking in Everyday Life, because it's so important for businesses to understand that if people feel the place of work is a place they want to go to, they're not going to call in sick because they hate their job. They're going to want to come into work. And when you have happy employees, you have people who are more productive. And one of the ways that people are happy is if there is some levity in the work environment. And if you're not taking things so solemnly, you could take your work seriously, but you don't have to be solemn about it. And I think that's the difference. That people go, you can't joke at work. No, you can joke. You just, you know, you're not joking about the people. You're joking about a situation. And listen, every time there's a tragedy in the world, what happens? 3 days later, jokes start coming out on it.
Saturday
the way
Night
that it happens.
Live. Yeah, Saturday Night Live. They got it all joked
exactly.
up. No, can you,
exactly.
Can you give us some tips on creative marketing tools that will help us to use creativity, imagination, and energy to help us, like, soar. We want to soar to new levels of marketing in both traditional and online media. What do you think we can use some marketing tools that are creative?
Okay, well, first of all, is always look at what it is. You have to think like a PR person, and you want to entertain as you get the information out there. Because if you think about it, the commercials that are remembered during the Super Bowl are the commercials that are funny and that are entertaining. Okay, so with that basis, you're thinking of the marketing. Who's your target audience? Who am I trying to reach? Am I trying to reach mothers the age of 20 to 30? Am I trying to reach grandparents? Am I trying to just reach men? And what is their sense of humor like? And how can I make my product, and what is different about my product that can be different about other, you know, another product at the same time? I mean, there's a million bakeries around, but the erotic bakery is the one that stands out. Okay? And, you know, this is the thing. There are drinks, mixes of drinks, but you talk about being able to drink and stay skinny, and then you got the skinny martini. All of a sudden, now you got a product that stands out. So what you usually try to do is you try to take a need that needs to be met. You don't have to reinvent something. You don't have to invent something. You could just recreate something that already exists and do a little tweak on it to make it better. And that's the same thing you do with yourself as a brand. So, for example, when I was doing a book signing, for my book, Adrenaline Adventures. And I said, well, I could do a book signing at Barnes & Noble. Well, that'd be great. I mean, that's what a lot of people do. Or I could do a book signing at the top of Kilimanjaro and take a picture of people at the top of Kilimanjaro doing a book signing, which is going to get media exposure, which is going to get press, and it's going to make it a fun story to tell. And of course, subsequently,
you did not go to the top of Kilimanjaro and do
this. I did a book signing at the top of Kilimanjaro. And if you go to FranCapo.com and you click on world records, you'll see a picture of me sitting in a chair with my son holding a stack of books and people lined up. And people go, who the hell was up there? I go, hey, people got to the top of the mountain. I was like, you're up here. What are you going to do? Buy a book.
You are brilliant. You are so genius. I love that. Oh, my God. You are so right. I mean, you got to think outside of the box. You got to think what hasn't been done. And if you can't come up with one thing that's an original thought, then I don't know what to tell you. You need to go get some mushrooms or microdot or something.
Or do something. Because the thing is, you know, every single thing around us, the computer you're looking at, the puppet I'm looking at in my room here, the puppet, the shades, everything started as a thought in someone's mind.
Right.
So all you're being asked to do is to take what you already have and think of a thought of how people could find out about it that brings creativity to it. I've been hired a lot by different companies to come up with different campaigns, you know, to make their product stand out. Right now I'm working with a company called Mr. Steam. They hired me and we're doing this whole campaign. But this is true. This is the other thing, though. I have to like the product because if I don't believe in the product, I won't endorse it.
Sure.
But some people just do. If it's money, they'll do it as a paycheck. But for me, I have to really, you know, believe in the product.
You really do. Now, I want to talk to you real briefly because we got 4 minutes. And I want to talk to you. I know that you have a very exciting new Volkswagen commercial coming out. And I know it's on your website, FranCapo.com. And the driver apparently is Chuck Norris's son, Eric. So tell us how exciting that was.
Eric Norris. Oh, my God. That was such a great commercial. All right, wait. I'm going to do a moment of reality here so everybody can hear this. Hold on 1 second.
Okay. Okay.
Sir, can you let the cat in? Okay. I had to do that. It's pouring rain and the cat's outside. So.
Get the damn cat in. All right. So
I had to do that. Okay. Now, Chuck Norris's son was right. I got asked by Volkswagen. They said that they were looking to do this campaign fast versus fast, right? Now, the thing is, they said to me, all right, do you get motion sickness? I'm like, nope, not at all. And they said, all right, we're going to stick you in a car. We're not going to tell you too much detail, but we're going to drive you around a racetrack and – you know, we want you to do your fast talking. Now, instead of doing the fast talking, because I'm the fastest talker, they asked me if I would actually do fast reading, which is not the record I hold, but they wanted it for a visual effect. And I was like, yeah, sure. So that they had seen me on the Discovery Channel do the Gettysburg Address. So they thought it'd be cool to have the scroll and do the Gettysburg Address. And let me tell you something. This was not an oval track. They flew me out to L.A., and this was a track where you're zigzagging and you're going around the bends. We were going so fast, I could barely see the words on the page. And my helmet, because I have a really small head, and so my helmet was like, yum, yum, and my helmet's going up and down. So it was hysterical. And they said, just react whatever way you feel you need to react. And so you'll hear when you watch the commercial, which you go to FranCapo.com, and it says click on VW commercial. Okay. Go there, and you will hear my natural reaction to what I don't want to spoil it, but you'll hear my natural reaction to what I said when the thing was over. And the only regret I had was that we did the commercial in one take, and I wanted to go around the track again. And they were like, no, that's great. I'm like, no, let's do it again.
I
should have screwed up.
I want to get this into you. Got a new reality show coming in, Woman of the Pulpit. And I know you're taping in Dallas July 26th through 28th. What's it about and when can we see it? We got 1 minute. So you better use those fast talking.
Better use my fast talking skills. We're going to be shooting in Dallas. And what it is about, women preachers, because I'm an ordained minister. I became an ordained minister so that I could say a prayer down by the wreck site when I went down to the Titanic. I've married different people, and not me personally, but married them. And, you know, so the whole show is about what it's like to be a female pastor or minister. And I don't have necessarily a church. My church is the church of humor and heart, because that's what I teach people in all my motivational speaking and my creativity and marketing. And that is what I'm going to be doing. Also, that show starts. It'll be coming out in the fall. I'll let you guys know more about it. Everything about me is on FranCapo.com.
I mean, oh, it's going to be on your website. That's the reality.
No, they're shooting the show, but I'm saying where the information about when and where it will come out will be on my website.
Oh, okay.
No, this is a regular TV show. This is like Glamfair. It's a regular TV show.
Oh,
and
yay!
The other thing, though, yeah, it's a regular TV show, been cast in it. We're going out there. We're shooting the whole thing. And the other thing is, I will say, for anybody who enjoyed today, if they would like to join me, tomorrow's my debut on Kundit.com/Fran Capo. Again, it's on my website. And they could join me between 5:30 and 6 o'clock tomorrow. They can ask me whatever question they want. It's a live chat show. I'll be talking about your show that I just did this show yesterday. Hey, guys, yesterday I was doing a radio show. I'll be talking about all different, you know, the things that are happening and answer any questions that people want. And it's going to be every Monday from 5:30 to 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
And that website is kundoot.com/Fran Capo. I'm excited. You're going to be mentioning Priscilla Leona on Question Reality. You got to promote it for me, honey. You got to chat me up and use me in your fast talk.
Okay, I'll tell you what. If your fans come into my chat room and they say they're from Priscilla, I'll talk about the show with them. Okay?
Yay! Yay!
So you gotta get your fans to come in because this is my first show. I need a lot of people in that room.
Well, I will definitely call. Let me see. It's 5:30 Eastern. So what is that? 5:30, 4:30. So that's 3:30, 2:30 my time. I'm gonna write that on my little notepad that's right by my computer like you have. So we are definitely gonna call you tomorrow. Thank you so much, Fran Capo. Can I get you to agree on the air that you will come back on my show next year? Because I adore you and love you.
I would love to. I had so much fun with you, and I love your energy, and I can see why your show is such a success.
Thank you. Well, I can see why you're such a success. I want to clone your little ass, or maybe come back. I want to come back as Fran Capo in my next life. Thank you.
We'll be twins. I love it.
I love you too. Well, say goodbye to your fans, and we will see Fran Capo next year, but I'm going to let you take us out in whatever way you want to take us out. Go ahead.
You know what? I say two things. I'm going to take you out this way. I'm going to do the three little pigs for you, my fast talking. Once you tell me the three little pigs, one little pig likes to sing, the second little pig likes to dance, the third little pig likes to sit and think, then a big wolf coming, tomorrow, war and peace.
Bye, everybody. FranCapo.com.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.